You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom-targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. DearHoffmanStore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We're talking about digital madness. That's a new book. My today's guest, Dr. Nicholas Carderas. He's a psychologist and an addiction specialist. The subtitle of Digital Madness is How Social Media is Driving Our Mental Health Crisis and How to Restore Our Sanity. And he details all the ravages of social media on our mental health. We talked about that in part one. In part two, we want to go a little deeper on the subject, but we also want to talk solutions. So how do you approach digital media addiction with your clients?
Well, like every other addiction, you do have to go through an inevitable period of detoxification, depending on how severe the problem is. So again, similarly to an alcohol issue, one has doesn't have alcoholism, they can manage moderating their drinking, then moderating is great. But for certain people that have crossed sort of a tipping point and have crossed that line of really a self-destructive, compulsive, addictive behavior, whether it's with gaming platforms or social media, we do need to do an inevitable detox period, usually of about 6 weeks. Because not only are they dopaminergic in the sense that they spike dopamine and the person becomes very chasing that dopamine rush that they get from whatever their digital drug of choice is. And again, I've worked with everybody, everything from Reddit compulsion to the obvious gaming ones, but to even things like Netflix compulsive, where people really literally couldn't stop streaming Netflix for 14 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. I kind of did that with new episodes of Yellowstone, I must confess.
Yeah. And, that was an Ozark first, and
Breaking Bad kind of did it for me. Yeah.
and of course, especially during COVID, when, my God, you know, there was nothing to do and people were quarantining and isolating, that was, talk about a perfect storm, right? Mm-hmm. That was unhealthy for a lot of people, but we're talking to the degree where people really lose functionality in their lives, where they can no longer work, or interact with family and really get into a severe dark place. And typically it's associated with a lot of depression, because if you're going to get stuck in that deep, dark rabbit hole, there's a lot of depression that goes with that. And so one of the things that we haven't talked about, depending on the age that a person becomes habituated to devices, they can get primed for impulsivity lifelong.
Yes.
Let me
just stop you right there, because I think that's one of the key elements to this, is we now have an epidemic, we call it a pandemic, of attention deficit disorder. We also have, we see a lot of impulsivity in people's actions, you know, the way that people treat each other, the crime wave, the violence, the political discourse. There seems to be an absence of something that, kind of a boring concept, patience.
Yeah. Patience, delayed gratification.
Yeah.
Pushing the proverbial pause button before people act has really gone by the wayside. And there's really clear research. And the person who did most of this research was Dr. Pritakis at the University of Washington. And he was also the editor of the JAMA Journal of Pediatric. He did all the research on ADHD effects and screen time. And this is going back to television in the 90s. You know, they found that if you're going to put a developing infant from ages 2 to 6 in front of a TV set for every hour of television viewing, it was going to increase their likelihood to get ADHD by 10%.
Hmm.
They did the same research with iPads and interactive technology back in 2010, and the effect was multifold because of the hyper-stimulating immersive impact of it. Because essentially what we're doing is we're habituating children to high-octane stimulation, and they get used to that stimulation, and then absent the stimulation, they can't focus.
Mm-hmm.
And so a kid gets so used to the bells and whistles of his or her device that they can't sit still in the classroom, or they can't sit still and look at nature because they're used to high octane stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes, according to some of the brain imaging research, hardwired because this is the part that I think a lot of people were shocked by. When you look at brain imaging affections, excessive screen time, you see prefrontal cortex effect, executive functioning effect, where you have less DGM, dense gray matter. You have an atrophy, a physically atrophying effect of the part of the brain that allows you to not be impulsive, to consequentially think, to say, well, I may have an impulse to knock this desk over or to punch my boss in the face, but I'm going to think this through. Well, that part of the brain gets compromised by excessive screen time and chronic drug use, by the way. So it's exactly what you said. So now we've created a generation of highly impulsive people. We've made them highly reactive because all we feed them now is emotionally provocative content on social media. We've made them highly impulsive because the medium itself makes them very instant gratification oriented. And now we've stuck them into a world context of doom growing type of phenomenon. And so no wonder some of these younger folks are not well psychiatrically. And we talk about 1 in 4 millennial, because we're talking about now not only a depression epidemic, but a loneliness epidemic. And so the most plugged in. So when you look at rates of loneliness, when you go down from baby boomer to Gen X to millennial to Gen Z, each increasingly younger cohort is reporting higher and higher rates of loneliness. And that shouldn't have been, because we all were sold the promise of technology was
to bring us
connectivity.
Together.
It was going to bring us together. It was going to be social connection. It was going to be like chocolate and peanut butter. It was going to be this wonderful combination. And yet we've seen the most plugged in generation is the loneliest generation.
And in a recent study, and you know, this is, I think, for dramatic emphasis, they found that as a risk factor for dying, that loneliness exceeded smoking statistically in terms of increasing the risk of premature death. So it's not a good sign.
I knew loneliness wasn't a good thing, but I didn't realize it was quite that. Yeah, that's a pretty shocking statistic. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can manipulate statistics, but this is according to a recent analysis. Okay, so Facebook, you know, faced with some challenges from other competitors, you know, TikTok and, you know, other venues, it has rebranded. They're now Meta, and they're placing big bets on virtual reality and something called the Metaverse. So what's your take on that? That's going to amp things up even more.
Right, and I write about that extensively in the new book, and I'm very glad that Mark Zuckerberg's bet is so far tanking. I'm very glad they've lost $700 billion in cap valuation. It's to me, it's very insidious. It's out of a bad science fiction movie. It's essentially The Matrix. It's an immersive reality blurring technology. Now, and in my book Digital Madness, I do a whole psychological profiling of Mark Zuckerberg and. You know, he's obsessed with Augustus Caesar and there's really quite a bit of egocentric narcissism with some of these tech titans. And I think you had that chapter,
Revenge of the Tech Nerds. I think that's what you
called
it.
Yeah, Revenge of the Nerds. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We were, I think, asleep at the switch at how, on a strictly business level, these were more ruthless people than Gordon Gekko, Wall Street. They were ruthless, but they looked like the Geek Squad. And so people were somewhat not threatened by, you know, look at Bill Gates and, you know, the rock star of the crew was Steve Jobs at the time. But this was a fairly innocuous looking group. They didn't look like J.D. Rockefeller, who looked like he was a
That stern, you know, chiseled visage, you know, he looked like a ruthless guy.
Right. He looked like a ruthless guy. And when you think about J.D. Rockefeller, who used to be the wealthiest man in the world, he controlled one commodity. He controlled Standard Oil or oil. And when you think about what the five tech oligarchs control, they're not only the wealthiest people on the, who have ever lived, but they're the most powerful in the sense that they control, they're the gatekeepers of information. Mm-hmm. And so they control what we see, how we think, how we function in the world. And so creating a metaverse then that we inhabit is profoundly troubling to me, because it's a universe that Mark Zuckerberg wants all to inhabit that he would control. Mm-hmm. And the libertarian in me doesn't want my reality filtered. I'd like it straight up, clean, no light, without my middle lenses on. And because we've seen that they've not been good stewards of our information, our of us at all, that we've seen that we've just been monetized. So to trust big tech implicitly with our reality. I was at a conference, I write about this in the new book, where I was at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco speaking at a conference, and there was the conference was humanity's at a crossroad, and there was all these different scientists with all sorts of horrific, you know, everything from, endocrine disruptors and radiation effects and how we were all going to not be in a very good place 30 years from now. But one of the presenters from Austria presented a slide at the conference that initially made people laugh, but then was pretty spine-chilling. It was the picture of a real cow with a virtual reality headset on. And it looked comical initially. Exactly. I had short reaction. I laughed when I first saw it. And then he explained to us that they were experimenting putting cows who were in small stall. They were
having, I can see where this is
they
going.
Were blurred yeah. reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they found that a cow that thought that it was free reign would produce more milk.
Wow.
And so cows who were deluded into thinking that they were free when they were actually in a enclosed pen were more productive. And I could see where that was going. So to me, that was like a perfect metaphor for, because there's a historical precedent for sedating the masses. You know, Marx talked about religion is the opiate of the masses. But as an addiction psychologist, one of the things we have learned was that in American slavery, plantation owners used to give black male slaves a bottle of moonshine every Saturday. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't because it was a reward for a hard work week. It was the idea that if you're sedated or drunk, mm-hmm. if you're on DOMA, alcoholic, digital, or otherwise, you're not going to rebel or organize or educate yourself. You're going to be stuck and trapped. And to me, that's the more nefarious part of this, is that I think the more we stay glued to Candy Crush and our devices, and the more monetized we'll become, and the less we're able to advocate for our own freedom and our own free will, our own thought processes, and less manipulation by algorithms.
Oh, absolutely. What are some possible solutions? You know, you actually, there's a great emphasis in your book on individuation and kind of taking a philosophical approach to this. You know, your family background is Greek. Maybe that's why you've turned to the classic mm-hmm. philosophers of the ancient philosophers mm-hmm. for a moral compass that maybe we've lost.
Well, there are two main swords that I think the ancient philosophers used that would be helpful weapons or tools against this modern digital age. One sort is the sort of critical thinking, learning how to be able to sort through information. And, you know, I'm frustrated no end. I'm not going to betray my political, but, this notion of misinformation and disinformation mm-hmm. is extremely Orwellian in my mind mm-hmm. because historically in our society, we trusted the individual to be able to sort through the nonsense from the spectacle. There had always been the National Enquirer. Nobody ever tried to deplatform the National Enquirer. We all knew that it was nonsense.
Yeah.
But you trusted people to be able to read it. You didn't try to censor it. Mm-hmm. And now there's this infantilization of our society, that sort of gatekeepers have to control what we see, what we can discuss, because it might be misinformation or dangerous, is troubling, because again, the big tech gatekeepers have not proven to be good stewards of the information. And so a metaphor that I like is the ocean's always going to be turbulent. We're not going to change the ocean. We're not changing the larger society, but can we become better swimmers to swim through and navigate mm-hmm. through rough waters? And I think we're in extremely turbulent waters right now. And so ancient Greek philosophy teaches the individual how to critically think, how to use their sense of reason. And secondarily, in the other tool in that toolbox is ethical discernment. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of powerful people with, you know, I write about their God complex, what I think they have God complexes in the book. And a lot of scientists have God complexes too. It's the Dr. Frankenstein syndrome, mm-hmm. right? The obsession to create life. You may not realize that things might go sideways.
Well, that's an allegory about runaway technology. And it was written, I think, mm-hmm. in the 1830s, but it was at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, and it envisioned, you know, science unguided by morality could result in monstrous consequences. That's the beauty of that classic book.
And it's so predictive of what's happened, whether it's experiments in gain of function research or creating micro black holes at the CERN super collider. And I talk about the CERN super collider. They're experimenting with trying to create micro black holes. And I quote the one scientist there, they were asked him, can't lose containment? And, you know, perhaps can't the micro black hole become a macro black hole and swallow up this part of the universe? And the lead researcher actually said, we don't think that'll happen. didn't get too convinced, by the way. But he was so obsessed with, you know, this was his, you know, Captain Ahab white whale. You know, he had to find, you know, that's a lot of scientists are so often myopic. They need to find their, whatever the particular quest is, whether it's viral research or quantum physics research or AI research, that they don't use, and there are certain ethical guidelines. They're stated, and if people had that as part of their formal education, or at least having sort of you know, like when you do research at any university, you have an ethics board that says, is this research ethical? And is it, especially if you're using human subject. Well, that part is currently missing in a lot of the big tech universe. If they're not going to do that, then we have to sort of, on the individual basis, kind of re-dig in our heel and fortify ourselves with some of that ancient wisdom, mm-hmm. Because I think it's necessary now more than ever.
And so you don't believe that regulation is the answer, or is it? There actually is, you make reference to something called the Kids Online Safety Act. Which is bipartisan legislation that's being sponsored by a couple of folks in Congress. What's that about, and what benefit might that offer to our digital landscape?
Well, I do think regulation can be part of the solution. I'm not in favor of censorship per se, because that's the slippery slope. I'm not a believer in that a governmental disinformation board should be deciding the content, because that is the slippery slope. But the act that you mentioned, the Online Safety Act, which was Senator Blumenthal in Connecticut and Marsha Blackburn in Tennessee.
Republican. Yeah.
What I feel is really powerful about and smart about what they're doing is they're looking to defang the most toxic part of it, which again, it's censoring of content can be troubling, but what makes it really unhealthy is the algorithm, which is really seeking out the vulnerable person. So mm-hmm. it basically allows people to opt out of algorithm. Mm-hmm. You would have to seek out the content yourself. Mm-hmm. So you'd have to search for a particular article. So it would stop that feedback loop. It would stop the echo chamber effect. So you would just be a person that needed to search something on Google, mm-hmm. then Google letting you know, giving you a a feed of what it thinks you want. Mm-hmm. So it's essentially, it's an opt-out of algorithm, which I think would be fantastic if we could do that, because, you know, how many of us have looked up some random thing at any given time, and after the next 3 days, everything we see on our digital world is related to that one thing.
Right. Hell, I'll have a conversation about Spain, and then I'll see, like, offers from Iberian Airlines. I guess they pick it up through the speakers. That's insidious.
People don't realize that insidious for where your conversation gets it. Then exactly, it's very Big Brother. And so, again, you know, as a kid who got raised on reading 1984 and Big Brother, you know, it does sort of give us adequate caution about what we need to be looking out for. And because otherwise, I think we're going to candy crush ourselves into just a dated oblivion and the control of our tech oligarch. And again, not to sound overly dramatic or conspiratorial about it, but we're almost there. We're almost at that point where we've ceded so much of our life to the information gatekeepers that it's, So I do think the solution is partially legislative. I do think that antitrust laws can be enacted, and there's Alina Khan, who is the antitrust guru, who was at Yale, and she wrote she writes really well about how antitrust laws have evolved over the last few decades, and they no longer regulate industries as much as they do provide ostensibly consumer protection, and. What that means is, as long as Amazon is giving you the consumer a better price, they didn't care that Amazon was gobbling up over 200 competing companies in a very monopolistic way. And that's a shifted philosophy. That didn't used to be the case four or five decades ago, Amazon wouldn't have been allowed to eat up its competition. And in the, you know, this newer version, and so people are re-exploring antitrust laws to see. And the other legislation that would be very helpful is repealing Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which essentially gives
they talk about that a lot. Can you explain? Thank you.
Yeah. It's an older statute from the 1970s, but it essentially views social media platforms and big tech as not publishers of content, but as the way to think of it is they're almost a message board. They're like a common message board that people post content on. So they're not responsible for the content because, you know, we're just the cork board at the local supermarket. Mm-hmm. And if somebody's going to post a message on it, we're not responsible for the people posting the message. So you can't sue me for being the cork board that somebody puts a message on. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing is that's entirely inaccurate. They are acting as publishers because they do edit content, they do censor material, they do act very much as publishers would. So they shouldn't benefit from the law, which essentially doesn't allow anybody to sue them for anything that can be problematic content. So they have protection from litigation. And that shouldn't be, because, for example, right now we have the case of the 14-year-old British girl in Great Britain, who for the first time, the coroner's report said that social media was a significant contributing factor to this girl's suicide.
That's a milestone.
And the point that's really important to realize, this 14-year-old girl wasn't just a depressed girl who was putting on some sad music and became sadder. This is a depressed girl who was predatorily targeted by, she was getting content from 10 Ways to Kill Yourself, you know, suicide options, content that was so harmful to somebody that was on the cusp of wanting to hurt themselves. And so the coroner said, no, and because it was part of his report, it's setting a legal precedent that now there's some culpability for the social media platform that was sending her that content that eventually led to her suicide. And so now they can be sued for that.
Wow, that's a real milestone. Okay, well, we've covered an enormous number of issues related to our digital obsessions. The book is entitled Digital Madness, How Social Media is Driving Our Mental Health Crisis and How to Restore Our Sanity. So, you know, mental health is a big topic here on Intelligent Medicine. You know, we talk about, you know, the efficacy or lack thereof of certain drugs being used for mental health problems. We talk about the impact of diet, nutrition, and exercise, and we talk about natural supplements that can promote mental wellness. But these things can barely make a dent against our current pandemic of mental disorders if we don't fix the environment. And the environment is heavily weighted towards digital distraction and digital entrapment. And, you know, it's all about immersion, you know, the immersive effects of social media, which are getting more and more. And, you know, if we get to the metaverse, well, that's a whole different ballgame. So thank you for pointing out some of the downsides of that. And you being Greek, I'll use the analogy. You're sort of the Cassandra of of the digital madness situation here, you know, calling out the dangers to the public in this book. So it's a worthy successor to Glow Kids. And thanks for your efforts on an individual level. And can you give out information about your website? And you also have a practice. So, you know, people listening, they or a loved one are suffering from digital addiction. What are some of the resources that are available? And do you see patients via, you know, in person or via telemedicine?
Yeah, thank you. I do have a website. It's drkardaras.com, K-A-R-D-A-R-A-S, simple Greek name. Not Cassandra,
it's
but
it's phonetic. Right.
Right. I'm the founder and chief clinical officer of a young adult treatment, residential treatment program in Austin, Texas called Omega Recovery. Mm-hmm. And we treat everything from mental health issues to substance abuse to digital. In fact, we're one of only two or three programs in the country that specializes in treating social media, gaming addiction. A lot of our, especially a lot of our young male clients have the trifecta. They'll have, they failed to launch, they flunked out of college because they're in the dorm room, is gaming all day, they've become depressed, they're smoking too much pot. And so there's a dual diagnosis component there. And a lot of our young women have personality disorders, like borderline personality disorder, and are not functioning well in the world, and it's inflamed by the social media. So our treatment program unplugs people. It's an 8-week program where they unplug for 6 weeks, and then we teach them how to manage mindful technology usage after they've detoxed. So that's a mega recovery. And I also have a adult rehab in Maui, Hawaii, called Maui Recovery. And that also similarly, but it's a little bit of a different program for adults. The one that we specifically focuses on what we've just talked about is Mega Recovery in Austin, Texas. Otherwise, I try to write as much as I can to raise awareness about this growing problem.
Okay, the book is Digital Madness, and also look for the excellent op-ed where the Paul Pelosi attack and other acts of violence are ascribed to the polarization, the kind of binary thinking that is fostered by our current digital environment. And, you know, certainly that's a plausible argument. So it's a call for action that we need to do something about it. So thanks for your great work. And we appreciate you coming on once again.
And thank you. Thank you for the work that you're doing to raise awareness and for everything there. You're doing it. It's really, really admirable. Thank you.
Trying to get the word out. That's Dr. Nicholas Cardaras. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have, and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news, and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations.